Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. And we are going to be having an absolutely fabulous guest today. His name is Don Oscar Miro Quesada. And we're going to be sharing a journey with him that is going to involve dealing with shamanic experiences. His book is titled Lessons in Courage. And we very definitely are going to be finding out about him. We're trying to reach him right now. And as soon as we get him on the line, then we'll begin our chat. In the interim, what I wanted to do is share with you just a thought about sometimes how we have to go beyond what we normally expect ourselves capable of even doing. And there was a statement that a person's reach should exceed their grasp. Now, why is this the case? Well, I came across some information that related to history.
Guest is with us.
Oh, fabulous. Our guest is with us, so I'll share this story with you later on. Hello, Don Oscar Miro Quesada. Thank you for being with
us
today.
Thank you, Donna. It's a pleasure to be on your show and explore the dance of creation together.
Well, I know that Sarah Scarlett, who has been a friend of mine for years, she said, you're absolutely going to adore Don's book, Lessons in Courage. And when I received it and I was going through it, I thought, this is very special because you really wanted to share the fact that you had a particular journey that made you go through, and I'm using the term made, but it's almost as if you had to go through certain experiences before you could be receptive to the wisdoms and the understandings that were given to you from the perspectives of some very, very wise, wise shamans. Don, Peru.
Correct.
How in the world did you ever find yourself there? You know, there's millions and millions, actually billions of people on this planet that will never, ever be in that part of the world, myself included,
well,
probably.
I was very fortunate as a soul to have incarnated in Peru. I was born there, raised there. My father was Peruvian. His entire family goes back to the times of the pre-Spanish conquest. And my mother was Italian-American, so I lived in both worlds, that of the modern northern hemisphere and that of the developing southern hemisphere. And that's how I found myself in Peru.
Now, here you are. You are what I call a Heinz 57, and it's
a Heinz 57, I love it. Can you elaborate,
well,
please?
I call myself that, too, because in today's world, and the National Geographic in a recent publication shows this very graphically, how because of interracial marriages, just we no longer should be even caught up with the aspect of, gee, I'm this race or I'm the other race or I'm that, this, that, or the other. We're human beings, period. That we may have
right.
A genetic legacy that encompasses variables just like yours does and mine does, that's a given. All right, that's fine. You can do a DNA test and find out all about it. But we're human beings. That is what should be considered first and foremost above anything else. And here
well,
you
I
are.
Well, I am always very inclined to make that the first thing that I issue forth when describing myself. Either that or being human. Who are you? Being human. My second response is a passerby, learning to embrace my inherent wholeness, which is my birthright, and thirdly, a friendly holographic projection for whatever you need me to be.
Mm-hmm.
Those are my three responses to people who inquire about this very ineffable experience of being human, of walking this good earth.
I think that that's very true. Now, the shaman that came in to your life, and I want to step back a moment. I want to quote something from your book. It says, you have the power, a couple of comments, you have the power to choose in every moment to awaken to the lessons before you, number one. And number two, we do have the power to create a new earth in the midst of a seemingly crumbling world. Now, in my view, the world has to crumble before it can be built. You have to let certain things disengage from the realities that we are within as we perceive them at this time so that new things can grow. I mean, Mother Nature does this every day. So we as human beings have to go through this process as well. Who was the first shaman that you crossed paths with, and how did you know that this one was to be a teacher for you?
Well, I need to answer that in two parts. In my experience as an initiate of these ritual healing arts that blend, in Peru at least, the pre-Columbian cosmovision or understanding of the universe that were held by the original native peoples of that continent, together with folk Catholicism, which is inherited from the European fountains of pre-Catholic. It really has a lot of the elements of Essene or the pre-church understanding of what it means to be a Christian, really. So this folk Catholicism together with these Inca and pre-Inca understanding of what our purpose is on this planet has been blended into what is known as curanderismo, or Peruvian shamanism. And so my exposure to the shamanic, to Peruvian shamanic traditions was from birth, for my father worked for the National Institutes of Public Health and was stationed in very remote rural areas during my most formative years. So I was around medicine people of a native origin, true, authentic, heartfelt, shamanic messengers and medicine people. Then, when I was almost 18, I had the great fortune of being taken on in a formal apprenticeship with Don Celso Rojas Palomino, Don Seltzer, my primary mentor in this tradition. And I studied with him every year for a minimum, like, spend 2 months, sometimes 3 months, from 1969 to his passing in 1982. So in response to your question, yes, I've been exposed to the authentic shamanic life way since birth, yet my formal apprenticeship and training was with one mentor, Don Celso Rojas Palomino, in my very young adulthood.
When you were apprenticed to him, did he choose you? Did you choose him?
Well, from a higher perspective, the choice is really in the hands of Creator Creatrix, of the great originating mystery. From the human perspective, I would say he recognized me the moment I showed up. And my motivations for going and meeting him were less than noble, if I may say so. It was the 60s. I was a good old flower child. And I was motivated to learn how to prepare some very powerful medicine that is characteristically used by northern coastal healers that involves the San Pedro cactus. So I was looking to experience the sacred dimensions of life through non-ordinary states of consciousness that were facilitated with the sacramental use of these plants, in this particular case, the San Pedro cactus. So I showed up to learn that, how to prepare that from him. And, of course, he had already dreamt of my arrival and knew very well that however I had gotten there was secondary to the fact that his dream was being fulfilled. And so, in a sense, I would say that he chose me way before I had any idea what I was doing. I hope that answers your question, Donna.
Yes, it does. Now, you had, when you were quite young, a very special experience with three shining ones. That's what you called them. And they were very tall, very wise individuals when you were quite young. And then they came to you as an adult within a ceremony that you had done with your teacher. And would you go into that a little bit? Because I find that so interesting that you had had the one experience when you were quite young of these ancient ones, and then it is reawakened in you, and your teacher mentor also could see them. Share that with us.
Thank you, certainly, because it's one of the most remarkable pivotal moments of my existence on this planet, at least in this incarnation. I know, given the topics that you cover on your show, that you're open to what I'm saying. And at the risk of your listeners feeling a sense of incredulity when it comes to this tale, I shall comply with your request, my good sister. So when I was 10 years old, I was sent from the coastal capital city of Lima because of having severe asthma that required me to have weekly intravenous treatments of cortisone to be able to breathe, of dexamethasone. And I was just withering away. It was destroying my body. So my father chose to take me up to the 11,000-foot altitude of Chosica, which is a village in the central highlands of Peru, at age 10 years old. And he would be working in Lima, and I was living in Chosica in this village up in the central highlands with my mother. And in one of the very severe asthma attacks that resulted in hypoxia, where I basically stopped breathing, I had a what you could call a classical near-death experience. I had already had one at age 1.5 that I did not remember through an electrocution, as a matter of fact. Yet, at the age 10, when I was slipping away and releasing and surrendering to a state of total bliss and peace and liberation from all the constraints of my physical experience and my struggle with this illness, I heard my name being called, and I snapped back. And when I opened my eyes, I saw what I've termed these three shining ones, because literally they were these shining presences, these ethereal, wispy, luminous entities that were flanking both sides of the bed I was in, and one was standing at the foot of the bed in front of me. And you can read this in much more detail, of course, in Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life. Yet, if I were to summarize the most impactful aspect of this encounter, it was that my asthma was suctioned out of me by the little shining one that was standing to my left, and I was restored to a condition of wholeness, of completion, of strength by the one to my right, by an imposition of hands, much like you see hands on healing in the world today. Once that was completed, then the elder being of this infinite, compassionate presence started to telepathically transmit images, visions, landscapes, and vistas. For the communication was not through word or linear verbal, but through insights and revelations. And I was shown my future, you know, details of which, as they started to become fulfilled in my life, I started to associate with this transmission that this shining one that was standing in front of me had done. And so, therefore, much happened, yet at that age, I went into a forgetfulness. And when I did show up at my primary mentor's resident home up in the village of Salas, which is north of Lima, because it's a place of sugar cane plant, where people grow sugar canes, very, very poverty-stricken area. The first night I arrived there, he was holding a healing ceremony for his community, and he told me to stay, and he sat me to his right. And in the middle of the night, all of a sudden, from the center of his altar, of his ceremonial ground, this luminosity started to coalesce and float upward, and lo and behold, those three shining ones that had visited me at age 10 showed themselves in their full glory, in their full expression. And the most extraordinary thing, Donna, is that Don Senso, the shaman that I was with, elbows me and he says, "Do you remember them?" Mm-hmm. And so he was seeing them as well as I was. And the level of objectivity, of validation, and of confirmation that what I had experienced is, at age 10 was not just my fanciful imagining, but an actual concrete visitation from the other side, from that crack between the worlds, from the parting of the veil, became visceral of an experience in me. And all that I had been told by this shining one that was standing at the foot of my bed started to come back in detail. Of course, being a young man full of my own hubris, if I would have paid more attention to not going in the direction that they had revealed to me, I would have saved a lot of suffering and pain of myself and others. Yet I still thought that I was in control of things. Just because one receives an anticipation or of what one's life is going to be does not mean that one pays attention necessarily, if you get my drift.
I'll quote from your book. You said, "I was destined to be something greater than the total jerk I had become."
Exactly. And that's the truth. I need to say it as it is, you know.
And I think that there are so many of us that go through this when we're younger, but your positioning today as, and I will use the word respectfully, as an elder, is to really pass on your understanding to others. And I know you and Bonnie Glass Coffin worked together on this book so that what you wanted to pass on could go out to the general public. And I like what you said, thoughts, words, deeds, these are the tools we have been given to restore harmony in the world. And of course, anybody hearing that go, "Oh my goodness, look at all the disharmony that is in our world." And I don't know of any generation that hasn't had disharmony. It seems like we come into this school of experience to grow through certain aches and pains and miseries so that we then can shuck them off and say, "Wait a minute, there's something bigger than what we expect." And then we start to motivate through change. And I know I was reviewing some materials this morning before doing the programming, and I was so engrossed in it, I just lost all sense of time. And I thought how easy it is to be stuck in the quagmire, the muck of the past, not taking from it the wisdom that needs to be learned, but just getting stuck in it so we don't move past it. And it seems like that's what's happening in the world today. And through your work, this is what you are wanting people to know with the book Lessons in Courage, that they don't have to wait for some big aha. They can begin to take dominion over their own personal space. Don't worry about the world. Just take care of your own place and your own space, and that's going to ripple out. That's going to have an effect. You have a number of exercises in your book that you recommend, and meditation is extremely important. But you pointed out something in your book that I thought was very intriguing, and that is that the shamans typically like to do their healing work, their mind work, at night. Am I correct?
In this particular tradition, certainly so. You are spot on, Donna. Other traditions around the world enjoy the daylight hours as much as the nighttime hours, depending on what type of ceremony is necessitated. When it comes to entering into sacred reciprocity, a relationship of balance and equilibrium with the earth and her mountains and her rivers and her trees and valleys and all of the stone relatives and all of our animal relatives, either seen or unseen, often that is done in a form of a pilgrimage or some sort of vision quest to a very venerated landscape shrine or ancestral ceremonial site, and that is done during the day. Yet when it comes to engaging the powers and forces of creation as your alliance and helpers, spirit helpers, to effect change of a healing nature, either emotional, mental, physical, spiritual, or just in the restoration of a relationship founded on soul, then those rituals and ceremonies, those practices are predominantly done at nighttime. I have studied the shamanic arts cross-culturally, and the Pachacuti Mesa, of which these practices in the book are derived from, as a foundational step in being able to transform one's suffering into wholeness, or at least initiate the process, are derived from a synthesis, really, which is what the Pachacuti Mesa is. It's a integration of world wisdom traditions with a healing focus derived from the arts and rituals of Peru. So those are done at nighttime, always. Yet, in my humble opinion, and I'd like to say this, the first shaman had no teacher. And so everybody has an inner healer, as you well know, and this may sound cliche, yet the reason that it's not being accessed is because there's too much pollution of mind. So this book was written really to address the pollution of mind, because only then can we really do something about the pollution of the environment. And there's a lot of faulty thinking out there in the world.
I agree. Now, I would like to ask, could you stay with me a little bit longer? Because I wanted to, for about another 15 minutes, I would love to discuss with you one of the exercises that you have in the book, so my audience will know about this, but also some various points of information of shamanic wisdom. Would you stay with me for another 15 minutes?
I would be delighted and honored. I'm here be of service.
Wonderful. This is Donna Sebo. My special guest today is Don Oscar Miro Quesada, and we're going to be talking more about some of the things regarding shamanism that I think you will find interesting. His book, Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life, is written so anyone can go through it, can see his story, feel the experience, really, with the clarity of words that he uses. We're going to take a break for just a moment. And when we come back, we're going to continue some more of the conversation with Don Oscar, and we will be back to share that with you. So don't go away. More good things to share. Donna Sebo here. We'll take a break, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime, or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. If you're just joining us, Don Oscar Miro Quesada is my guest today. Lessons in Courage is his book. Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life is what this book is all about. It's also about his journey and how he has reached the point of understanding that he has. Don Oscar, when I was going through your book, you had a particular experience, but let me backstep a little bit, because you talk about Vista. Vista is a type of shamanic clairvoyance, and you say it allows one to see the person's sombra, or the spiritual double, and it represents a person's psychological as well as physical traits. Now, this was something you were gifted with, and it took practice and discipline. That is one of the things that you stress in here, that you have a great deal of respect and appreciation for your teachers because you were not very disciplined. And when they had to put up with a lot of your silliness, they wouldn't. And one of the things they wouldn't put up with is you're taking any kind of narcotic substance. They absolutely would not let you, one of your teachers especially, I recall, said, "You cannot come into my house, and you will not come in to my space at all." He wouldn't tolerate that at all, would he?
Correct. And that goes for saying with anything that alters one's consciousness in a recreational manner. There's a toxicity that impacts not only our physical vehicle, but our etheric or bioetheric sheath that takes a long time to clear out. If one approaches non-ordinary states of consciousness or expanded levels of awareness just out of, you know, playful curiosity or just because it's something cool to do or as a recreational manner of bonding with your peers, it defeats the entire purpose of accessing these very sacred dimensions of being that are our human destiny. It's part of our evolutionary purpose for being on this planet is to progressively expand into emerging with the ultimate ground of being, call it what you may, by name. And it does involve stepping out of the way, and it does involve opening up to very different states of experience. yet with a defined purpose, that experience, no matter how profoundly transformative at the personal level, is ultimately in service to the great sacred hoop of life, to the world as a whole. So it's always based on the intention of serving others, of serving the planet. And when a person is young, as I was in the days when I began my apprenticeship, there was this huge hunger for these expanded states of consciousness that was misused. And so people were doing it to get high rather than to deepen their soul's progression. And that's what Don Celso was adamant against, the use of these very ancient, powerful medicines in a manner that did not honor how the reason that they were placed on this planet by God, Goddess, Creator.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, I never got away with it. He always busted me because I was a good old surfer dude in those days, and it was part of the culture to go out and smoke some marijuana and things like that. And I would cringe every time I do that until I realized that, I was being a hypocrite. I was being unfair not only to him, but to all those that I knew was my my life's path to help move beyond their own addictions, beyond their own weaknesses. So I hope this answers your question, my good sister.
Yes. Now, one of the experiences that you tell about in your book that is so profound, there was a period where, and I think this is still the case to a degree, but this was a point in time when Peru was still governed by a military dictatorship. There was martial law, mandatory curfew, and your teacher, your mentor, wanted to go and make offerings of cornmeal and tobacco to the Upus, the mountain guardians of the region, of a particular region, because there was something that was to be in flower. That was, he had had a vision about this, and there was a specialness about this mission. And you had to go during night because your lives were literally in danger. And you went during the night, and then the military came into the area. They had dogged to find you because somehow or another they had become aware that your group was going through the military installation, and that was a no-no. It meant death, really, if they caught you in the right circumstances. And there was a very profound happening that occurred. This just is, and I know that this happens, but this was just utterly phenomenal. Can you tell us what happened there?
Surely, and this is one of a handful of encounters with our unlimited human potential that I hope for those who read the book will serve for them to know in every fiber of their being that what we are perceiving with our five senses is but a fraction of what we are capable not only of perceiving and grasping as an expanded reality, but of actually entering into relationship with the divine and calling on the divine to assist us if our hearts are pure, if our intentions are clear, and our motives are pristine. And that's what it takes. A letting go of any personal desire to serve oneself and an openness to live what the Lakota say is a good day to die. And that requires a releasing of fear completely from one's experience of what it is to be human. So we were at the in the midst of this army of this military territory in the time of Velasco Alvarado, which was the general that had the coup in 1969, and it was, you know, a very risky area to even talk about going there. Yet Don Celso had, my mentor, had received a very distinct, you know, vision using his own vista. Vista you mentioned, and you articulated it very nicely, can see into the sombra of a person, meaning the spiritual double. And we're not talking about the typical clairvoyance in terms of this the psychic ability, but really of a looking with the heart. So you close your eyes and you project your entire essence into the other. And when you do that, it's equivalent to having that life review that occurs when you are encountering a near-death experience. You feel all the pain, the suffering, or the joy and bliss that you may have, that your actions may have imparted on another, or even see them flash before your eyes. It's related. Vista is related to that experience. It's related to being able to enter into that liminal in-between state, project yourself into the other, and see them, for their entirety, and retain consciousness of what you've experienced within them. So you're not really using clairvoyance. It's more of a clairsentience, if I may say so. So he was a master at the most refined development of this innate human potential. And so I trusted him implicitly. We went into this area that normally would have taken us a day to get there. It took us 3 days. We were totally out of food, totally out of water. We arrived in the evening to gather the plant medicines that we were to do to in service to his community. And all of a sudden, this caravan of military personnel comes, you know, trucking down the night. It was a moonless night. I could see the lights of the jeeps and the trucks and hear the dogs barking. And Don Celso said, disappear. Just remember that we're not even physical forms. We are the allies and the relatives of the sacred San Pedro cactus that is waving in her blossoming in the night sky. Become the flower of that sacred plant ally that has served our ancestors since time immemorial. Be that plant. And therefore, we opened ourselves to entering into that plant. If any concentration or focus would have been broken at that time, we would have been detected. I recall being both in the plant, being the plant, and also maintaining a sense of my own personal integrity as a practitioner of these arts. So I was in this flux, this, you know, back and forth between waking and unconscious, conscious and unconscious states. So I could hear the dogs. I could feel the warm breath of the dog panting by my side. The flashlights I could see through my eyelids. And after about 5 or 7 minutes of looking for us, and I could hear them saying, no están acá, deben estar por otro sitio, they're not here, they must be somewhere else. They got up and left and went looking for us somewhere else. And this goes to show that we are multidimensional beings, and that with the proper training and a trust of a soul-based universe, miracles can be lived. We would have faced a firing squad if found there, because it was a top secret location.
Well,
and you could read more about it, of course, in Lessons in Courage.
Absolutely. I want to quote from your book. I know we're closing out our conversation today. You say, loving intention, focus, and alignment with the forces and powers of nature actually molds the material world. This and much more, Don Oscar, it's in your book. And I think, though it is not a big book, it is a book that can be savored. It is a book that causes an awareness of thinking and might speak to the hearts and minds of those that get so agitated about feeling so helpless when we're really not as helpless as we perceive ourselves to be. Lessons in Courage, Peruvian Shamanic Wisdom for Everyday Life, is really quite insightful. And I think the wisdom that you have in it is just outstanding. People will find out more about you and where you do. You give classes. You are involved. Is there a website? Is it mesaworks.com? Mesaworks.com?
Well, it is, yet by the end of this week, it is all going to be heartofthehealer.org. Heartofthehealer.org, because MesaWorks is my personal website. Heart of the Healer is the alliance or the foundation that I began in 2001, and it's through the organization heartofthehealer.org that you can find apprenticeships in these arts as well as pilgrimages and sacred travels to Peru, and you'll be amazed. It's all about creating sacred community among people from all walks of life. That's what we're
And I
to
think
do.
That is so important. We need to realize we do have the opportunity, no matter where we are, no matter who we are, by walking in integrity in our own space, to be able to shape, as you said so beautifully in your book, reshape the world that we live in. And this isn't woo-woo. It really can make a difference. Don Oscar Miro Quesada, thank you so much for being my guest and for staying with me some extra time. Lessons in Courage is his book. Check it out. I think it will touch your hearts and your minds in a very special way. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hello, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And by the way, for those of you that might be listening up in the far north, up in Alaska, I am going to be traveling into Anchorage and Fairbanks. It's always been like a second home to me. I just love going back for some time to visit with you and to do some broadcasts. And if you want to meet with me while I'm in Fairbanks or in Anchorage, all you have to do is call me at my office at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. Also, if you go in and to my website, DelphiInternational.com, pull up my newsletter, you'll find out the local numbers where I can be reached while I'm up there. So I will be up there as of the 15th of this month, and I look forward to, again, visiting one of what I consider one of the most beautiful places on this planet. Cleaning. Oh, my goodness. Always seems. I think that's the reason we women live so long. We always know there's going to be a toilet boil that has to be cleaned, dishes to be washed, floors to be scrubbed. My goodness, the Cinderella syndrome in the way that we really would rather not have it. Well, it's not just we gals that have to do things. You know, there's a lot of big monuments that have to be cleaned. Why? Because the very air that is about different items like Big Ben, the Lincoln Memorial, Eiffel Tower, the Acropolis Hill sculptures, the Statue of Liberty, all kinds of things. All of these places end up being encrusted with dirt. So it is really important to be able to keep them clean. And people that do this, we have a building, let me digress for a moment, we have a building called the Tacoma Dome here in the Pacific Northwest. And the last time that thing was cleaned, because you really have to be part acrobat, daredevil, and pure gutsy, and have a lot of safety lines in place to just clean this huge, huge dome. And I don't think we realize what it takes to keep things in order. Well, they haven't done it for a long time here. But Big Ben, we all have known about this in England. Oh, we just take it for granted that the reason it looks so good is just, well, it was well made. No. They have to climb that 316-foot-tall clock to scrub. That's right. I got a picture of it in front of me. To scrub four timepieces in the Big Ben clock. And each of these timepieces contain 312 pieces of opal glass. You're hearing me correctly. And they can't stop the clock to do this. It has to be bonging at the right times. So the workers, they're on these cables, and they're in bright red outfits so that you can see them. And they have to dodge as they're cleaning. It is really a precise cleaning thing. They have to dodge the minute and hour hands, which measure nearly 14 and 9 feet long, respectively. They have to clean this thing every 5 years. Next cleaning is in 2016. Here in the U.S., Honest Abe, you'd think, well, that magnificent sculpture. Oh, it is so impressive. If you've never, ever been to Washington, D.C. and had a chance to see that sculpture, by golly, you ought to do it. I remember seeing it when I was a little girl. It was all illuminated. My dad got lost on a loop in Washington, D.C., which you still can get lost on, and he was going round and round, and we happened to pass the Lincoln Memorial, and I will never, ever forget it. It just embedded itself in its memory in my mind, and I think I was about 8 or 9 years old. And when I saw it about 5 years ago, it was just as powerful an impression on me. And it's housed in this magnificent building, but they have to power wash this. They use cotton swabs to clean off the bugs and the bird droppings from the huge ears on the statue. And let's travel to France, the Eiffel Tower. It takes 10,000 doses of cleaning product, 4 tons of cleaning rags, and 25,000 trash bags to polish this monumental landmark. My goodness. You know, the Golden Gate Bridge in the San Francisco area, well, by the time they finish servicing that, they have to start all over again. It takes them so long to get the job done. They have just this tremendous amount of time, effort, and energy. And, of course, it's dangerous work. So there you've got it. Ladies, when we get frustrated with our dust rags and the bugs and, you know, the dirty floors and the paw prints from our four pod friends that are brought in when it's wet and rainy and muddy, well, just be glad you're not doing the Eiffel Tower. I read those points of information, and I said, thanks, I'll stick with my house. That will be very much enough for me. Donna Sebo here, and I know we are just about out of time. I was so pleased that Don Oscar was able to spend some extra time with us, because I think within every culture, there are those that are very, very wise, that want us to know and understand that we don't have to be victims in life. But one of our biggest responsibilities is to be true to ourselves and to have integrity, honesty, and clarity with who and what we are. That's not an easy thing to accomplish. But when you can do that, then you're able to participate in the world, and you're able to contribute something of value. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't buy into the victim attitude. Be open to learning. Be open to becoming educated. Be open to learning how to critically think about things. And last but not least, also be open to trust. I found that that was one of the hardest things for me to learn, and I still have to remind myself that that is a part of the human experience, too. And the only way that trust can be established is when you really can trust yourself as well. This is Donna Sebo. You have a magnificent weekend. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, just know that you have a magnificent place in this experience called life. Your story is just as significant as anyone else's. And I'm so delighted you took time to share an hour with me. I look forward to you joining me again at this broadcast table. This is Donna Sebo. Take care. I'll be with you soon. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.